Okay, so as we begin transitions, transition from retreat to going back to our lives in various places, so recognizing that what you've been doing is developing the tools for living a skillful life, living an awakened life, and to recognize that the teachings of the Buddha are for us to be able to realize or to bring into being in our daily life. We have this opportunity to have retreat time, and it's very precious. Very useful, but the reality is we don't live in retreat all the time, and even if one were a monastic, you don't live in retreat all the time. And I go back to a building project, and even coming to the retreat, you know, came in with a legal case to deal with. So, it's just this is the the teachings are there to as a container, as a foundation, as a ground to be able to work with these conditions of having a human body, a human life. And of course, the Buddha's teachings are there to make it easier for us. The Buddha's goal, purpose, is to give us the tools to be free from suffering, and it's a very simple. Very simple purpose, very simple goal. That as soon as you start practicing it and exploring it, you realize, it keeps opening up, keeps getting deeper and deeper. And I've been, through the retreat, all of us have been giving perspectives and ideas of what are helpful tools. And I started the retreat and probably carried through off and on through just picking out that gradual path, so that recognizing, you know, that there is this gradual training, a gradual path. And even the, it's like when you say gradual training, even the, so like the, taking the precepts, the word of training is sikha. So that when you take a precept, it's a panatipata velamani sikha padam samadhyami, I determine to take on the training to refrain from taking life of any living creature. So it's a training. We have, and that's a theme that goes through all of the Buddha's teachings, that he's giving us a training or an education, the higher education in living a skillful life, so that this training, cultivation, we start working with different areas of our life, and we have. Of course, the meditation is just one area, but there's all these different elements that come together to help support our aspiration to be free from suffering. And there's a set of teachings that the Buddha gives, and quite beautiful. They're separate suttas, fairly short, but then taken together, their qualities that are like the basis of a good life or a basis of accomplishment of a skillful life. And it's each of the suttas is a particular quality. So in the same way that the dawn is the harbinger of the sun rising, then in the same way such and such a quality is a harbinger of the arising of the Noble Eightfold Path. So, and each sutta is exactly the same, and taking seven different qualities, and the first one is kalyana mittata, which is spiritual friendship, having good spiritual friends, drawing close to good spiritual companions, having good friends in Dhamma. And of course, this is a quality that the Buddha admonished or pointed out to Ananda, that because Ananda sort of had this blazing insight that it was half the holy life to have good friends and good spiritual companions, and then the Buddha saying, it's not half the holy life, Ananda, it's the whole of the holy life. Drawing close to like-minded people, drawing close to people who share similar values, who have a similar aspiration, and that's a huge support for our cultivation of the path, that's a quality. Then that's the first quality that the Buddha points to. And he goes, as I said, they're separate suttas, but then overall it's tied together as each of those qualities is lays a foundation for the arising of a really good life. And the second quality is what's called sila sampada, which is being accomplished in virtue, perfect in virtue. Sometimes that has a difficult connotation, because then you try to be perfect and you drive yourself nuts. But it's more like maybe complete, and complete is in the sense that one is able to be well established in virtue and integrity and moral conduct, but it's also from the perspective of in other places the Buddha talks of perfection and accomplishment in virtue, and that it's one's conduct and virtue is unstained, but it's also the conduct or it's the virtue that leads to freedom from doubt and to concentration, to samadhi. And sort of it's not tight and tense and or worried and anxious. It's there's an accomplishment in virtue where the purpose of virtue is to feel good. It's one of the different sutta the Buddha is asked, what is the purpose of virtue? And I said, the purpose is non-remorse, so that one can just not have to second guess oneself, not to rehash old conduct things that just non-remorse. Can just put it down. You feel good about yourself, and that's really important. So sila sampada, in the context of these suttas, as a harbinger of the Noble Eightfold Path. It's a nurturing quality of this path of practice. The third quality that the Buddha points to is Chanda Sampada, so that a completeness of Chanda as desire, or accomplishment in aspiration, skillful desire, so that one is able to rouse up a quality of desire, motivation that doesn't create tension in the mind, doesn't focus on things that are unskillful, that nourishes this whole path. So that Chanda Sambada, how to bring about a perfection or an accomplishment in what we desire, what's actually worthy of desiring, what's worthy of motivating oneself to achieve, to gain, to become. Now those are, because sometimes we say, I can't get anything, I can't become anything, I've just got to be nothing. and that's a something too. It's trying to get rid of. So that's that Chanda Sampada. How do I motivate myself, and how do I create a dynamic of really wanting what's truly good for myself and all other beings? That's a really, it's again a harbinger of this Noble Eightfold Path. Atta Sampada is the next one, and that's perfection of self, an accomplishment of self. It's really interesting because, again, in a teaching that we pick up as no self, can't have a self, there isn't any such thing as self. The Buddha is saying, how do you accomplish self? How do you become self-actualized? How do you become self-realized? And that, because it isn't as if anybody else is doing the practice for you. This is, on a very conventional level, there is this me here who reaps the fruits of his or her karma, and we have to create a self-worth and a self, like a skill in having a, like, it's really interesting to meet different teachers who one assumes are highly accomplished, and you meet them, and their personalities are just all over the map. That's really true. Like Ajahn Chah was a just warm, gregarious, engaging a person who had been who could be incredibly funny and terrifying sometimes, just incredibly fierce. But that in terms of a self, generally it was a sense of warmth and engaging quality. If somebody like, say, Ajahn Chah's successor, Lopa Liem, really accomplished, exceptional person, completely disinterested in human beings are, they're there, but you go and talk with him and you know, there's corners of the room he'll pay attention to. You know, and it's really interesting. But that's his personality. And so we carry our personality, our self. But how do we apply that and use that toward practice of Dhamma? And I think somebody like Lopa Liam is incredibly respected throughout Thailand. Not because he's engaging, but because he has such incredible integrity and clarity. And on the level of personality, he'd just as soon be out in the forest sweeping or on his own or doing some carpentry project. But you know, he gives himself to whatever. So we use our that sense of atta sampada, an accomplishment of self. We transform that self into something that aligns with Dhamma. So it isn't that we have to become something else, or somebody other. We just have to pay attention to what is it that creates suffering. And what is it that frees us from suffering? So, atta sampada. The next quality that the Buddha points to is ditti sampada. And so, that perfection of view or accomplishment in view, so that one is, one has a view that aligns with truth. One is able to see things in their true nature and keeps, working from that perspective, aligning that view, that perspective with our inner being and then with the world outside. So we're that quality of view is being tempered, worked on, purified, helping us to be grounded, in right view. But it isn't through sort of forcing our minds into a mold of bright view, but it's through you keep reflecting and investigating. So what is it that leads to a true understanding of myself and the world around me? What is it that, what kind of view allows me to set aside that habit of I making? There's an idiom in the Buddha's teachings: the I making, the mind making, the underlying tendency to conceit, and it comes up in the suttas: ahankara, mamankara, mana anusaya. And because it isn't as if this sense of self and sense of worry about me and mine and one, it actually has a tangible existence. We make it, create it, and we prop it up, we cherish it. That coming back to a view that accords with so ditti sampada. The next quality that the Buddha points to is called apamada sampada, a perfection in heedfulness or accomplishment in diligence. Apamada is a term that the Buddha uses in many, many places, and it's this quality of heedfulness, of circumspection, carefulness, a broad perspective that we apply in our conduct and in our interaction with the world, but there's a diligence there as well. So it has quite a few nuances in that word, apamada, where one is both, say, careful, but one's not fearful, one's diligent, but it's directed and it's solid. This quality of a comprehensive understanding of what we're doing, what we're trying to do. So there's a heedfulness that arises. So this is another one of the, say, harbingers of the Noble Eightfold Path. The last quality that the Buddha points to is called Yoniso Manasikara Sampada. So the perfection in considered attention, accomplishment in wise reflection. So it's that Yoniso Manasikara, this quality of attending to things carefully, attending to things in a bringing it back to the root, bringing it back to essentials, and not letting attention drift or wander or proliferate in ways that are undermine our opportunity to establish clarity and well-being. So these seven qualities are what the Buddha points to as, say, collectively, say, on an individual basis, point to each one as something that's facilitates and is a sign of the arising of the Noble Eightfold Path. But then collectively, they're all qualities that are the basis of a true good life. So that quality of just good spiritual friendship, accomplishment in virtue, accomplishment in motivation, accomplishment in self, self-actualization, accomplishment in view, accomplishment in heedfulness, accomplishment in considered attention. So those are all qualities we can work in. They're all qualities that we can we need to rely on as we go about our life, as we live in the world and engage with the various duties, responsibilities that we have, to be able to do. You realize as we establish ourselves in these wholesome qualities, and the path becomes more clear for us, there's a tremendous amount of ease that arises. The tendency to either perceive problems or create problems or feel burdened by problems and doesn't really it's sort of like, yeah, I don't need to go there. It's just this is not necessary. And that's really the mind can be incredibly light and bright. And it isn't that we have to manufacture it or prop it up. That's what happens when we put this path into practice. It's a natural result. So those are a few kind of reflections to wind up the retreat. You've all been practicing diligently, and it's been a delight to be here. I always enjoy the opportunity myself to come and practice for 10 days and be with other people who are practicing and who cherish this teaching of the Buddhas.